You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Good afternoon. For me, it's been a week of answering requests for help that I never expected to be faced with. Requests from lady singers of assorted ages who have been inquiring about that nebulous musical property, Special Material. Now, Special Material means a song, or as it's often referred to, a routine, written especially for the performer in question. As distinct from an ordinary standard song, which everybody knows, and anyone can sing if he or she wants to, and can persuade people to pay to listen to it. Special Material is a kind of private tailoring, a song written with one performer's tricks and technique in mind, and very often the stuff is useless for anyone else. Every now and again you get a performer with such an original style that whatever she sings becomes Special Material, a clear case of the singer, not the song. As a demonstration of this whole art, imagine a songwriting team faced with the twin challenge of writing two songs. One that advertises in as blatant a way as possible the, shall we say, physical good health of the singer, and the other that stresses the impregnable innocence of the singer. Well, first, the Wanton song. And I have to say that as a song, it doesn't sound like very much. What you have to remember is that it's an example of the visual song, a song that has no effect at all unless you can see it being performed. Now, here we have a lady with a figure so effective at proving the proposition that the shortest distance between two points is a curve that you can't help laughing. In fact, the singer is laughing at herself. She's supposed in this record to be a sort of fairground barker, tempting the men to see a sideshow featuring her.
It's fire and it's flame, so be careful of this day. And they call me Sister Hanky Tang. They call me Sister Hanky Tang.
Well, I don't have to tell anybody who that was, subverting the morals of the West there. The song dates back to a 1933 picture called I'm No Angel, which was distinguished in that it was the first time any leading lady in any movie had written the script herself. But Mae West was very clever that way. She was also clever in others, and she was the first film star ever to insist on making a picture without receiving any salary. Instead, she took a piece of the action, which is why she enjoyed such a comfortable old age. The song was written by a team which often wrote for her, but I don't know anything about them. They were a Mr. Brooks and a Mr. Ellison, assisted by a Miss Dubois, who might just have been a disguise for Miss West herself. The song is not exactly subtle. Mae West's great contribution to the popular arts was not subtlety, but its opposite, lampoon. Where she was original was in what she lampooned. She poked fun at sex, for which reason you could say she was the most morally upright of all the great sex symbols of show business. But of course it is possible to write a wanton song without being half as suggestive as that. And whether this next song comes under the heading of Special Material or whether the singer just came across it, I'm not sure. But it's a much, much wittier song than Sister Honky Tonk. But not really as funny. Mae West was a genuinely funny woman. When greeted once by Red Skelton on a radio show, how do you do? She answered with a deadly straight face, how do I do what? You don't find that kind of facetiousness in the art of Margaret Whiting. But you do find, elevated to a very high art, the trick of singing unusual material in a musical way.
I'd like to hate myself in the morning and raise a little hell tonight. I've got the urge to carouse and maybe raise a few brows. Cut loose and pull all the stops out. Who cares if they call the cops out? I'd like to wake at noon feeling guilty and know somehow that something isn't quite right. I just might hate myself in the morning, but what a lovely time I'll have tonight. I'd like to hate myself in the morning and raise a little hell tonight. And from my first double gin, I'll give new meaning to sin. And from tomorrow's front pages, you'll find me acting outrageous. I'd like to wake at noon feeling guilty and know somehow that something isn't quite right. A lovely time I'll have tonight. I'd like to lift my lids in the morning and leave the wrong hotel at dawn's early tonight.
Margaret Whiting, with a song written by John Mayer back in the early 1970s, and a perfect example of what the profession means when it asks for special material. There was one very gifted musician who created special material of a very special kind, and that was Gordon Jenkins, whose career began in a slapstick kind of way with a job in a nightclub playing a mobile piano. But in his maturity, Jenkins once or twice wrote what very few writers have ever managed, or indeed been allowed to manage, an album of original material telling a story. Manhattan Tower was the best known, but there was also a very odd one called Seven Dreams, in which the narrator ends up flying away with a non-existent dream woman. There was a third, it was called The Letter. It was called The Letter because the story is told by the man reading aloud his own letter as he writes. The story was pretty trite, and I find it a real pleasure not to have to listen to it. But some of the songs are much better than that. What they really consist of is a love affair told through a set of songs. You can guess the routine. They meet, they love, they row, they part, they cry a lot, they hire a publicity agent to plug the record. Which was incidentally made around 1959 and has just reappeared on the market as one of the Capitol revivals. Now here is the first song in the cycle, where the heroine is describing how it all started.
I'm in trouble, such beautiful trouble, and it's the most serious trouble I've had, and I'm glad. I have a most exciting heart palpitation. This situation is completely out of hand, and it's grand. One day's known me, and he wants to own me. I'm putting up a fight and hoping I lose. My doctor made a wise prediction. He said this wonderful affliction was simply that beautiful trouble called love. I try to be good, but it's hard to see good. If love is blind, Buster, hand me my cane, 'cause it's plain. I'm in the most delicious new kind of danger. This perfect stranger strikes before the iron is hot, and why not? No longer am I bored. I'm on the high board. I took one look and I'm ready to leave. No time to even count to 10, kids. I'm shouting, here we go again, kids. I'm in that beautiful trouble called love.
Beautiful Trouble, the first song in a musical play on record, The Letter, starring Judy Garland, and written words and music by that very gifted and I think underrated man, Gordon Jenkins. Why are most of the singers of Special Material all ladies? I'm not sure, except that ladies have always found it easier than chaps to get jobs in nightclubs, possibly something to do with the anatomical side issues. But in any case, the best writers ever of Special Material were chaps. I'm thinking of Cole Porter and Noel Coward, the American and English counterparts of each other's lyric writing styles, although Coward was able to extend his art into a much broader territory than Porter. Indeed, some of Coward's best and most ingenious work was not so much songwriting as social history. Now, as for Cole Porter, he once wrote a piece of Special Material which was really unusual. In 1939, George Kaufman and Moss Hart wrote a straight play about the owners of a splendid country home who are invaded one day by a monstrous boar who slips on their front step and has to stay with them in the house until his foot heals. The central character was based on that dreary self-advertiser, Alexander Wolcott, and in the play, his assistant is a kind of Schnozzle Durandy. The play was full of playful portraits of this kind, including one of an English society darling who writes songs and plays in between yawns. Now, clearly, if one of your characters is a songwriter, you really should supply him with a song. And so Kaufman and Hart wrote to Cole Porter and asked him to write one. Of course, the character of this songwriter was based very closely on Noel Coward. So Porter wrote a song which was supposed to lampoon the world-weary, hey-ho side of Coward's songwriting style. And just to make sure everybody got the point, the author of the song was listed as Noel Porter. And the piece was actually sung in the stage production, but not in the movie version. Since then, it's disappeared, which is a pity, because although it's a very minor piece of work, it is something produced in most unusual circumstances, and just about the only example we have of one major songwriter deliberately sending up the style of another. I know about George Gershwin's by Strauss, but that was much more friendly. And besides, by then, Strauss was in a place where nobody had to bother about sparing his feelings. The trouble with Special Material, of course, is that too much of it can sound a bit precious. Even the ladies who like singing it always include good, solid standards in their act if they know what's good for us. So here, for a reason justified by the calendar, is one of those solid songs. Some people say that Ruth Etting introduced it in 1928 in a show called Whoopi. Other people say Ruth Etting introduced it in a 1930 show called Simple Simon. Who's right? The answer is yes. Miss Etting introduced it in both shows.
Hey, baby, won't you love me or leave me or let me be lonely? You won't believe me, but I love you only. I'd rather be lonely than happy with somebody else. You might find the nighttime the right time for kissing, but nighttime is my time for just reminiscing, regretting instead of forgetting with somebody else. Someone is you. I intend to be independently blue. I want your love, but I don't want to borrow. To have it today and to give back tomorrow. All my love is your love and no love for nobody else.
Lena Horne, Love Me or Leave Me, and when I said there was a calendar pointing at that one, I was thinking of its composer Walter Donaldson, who was born February the 15th, 1893. Regular listeners will know how highly I regard Donaldson, and also how much I'm diverted by rumours of his wayward ways. Donaldson, who would rather go to the races than write a song, who never seemed to have any money on him, yet was the most generous man in the world. Donaldson, who drifted through his life with the casual, relaxed demeanour of a man without a care in the world, and yet who could write tunes that nobody else could approach. He was a true original, and he was also one of those odd cases you find among composers of a man who, although he had nothing to do with jazz or even played halfway properly, could turn out all kinds of tunes that musicians and singers adore because the songs swing of their own volition. I often think that Donaldson must have had trouble demonstrating his songs to publishers and producers, because he was one of those piano players who had the rare gift of making everything sound terrible. I mean, what can you say about this next hair-raising piano playing by Donaldson at a public concert just before the start of the last war? It almost sounds like the reason it started. My buddy sounds so simple. On paper, it looks like a child's exercise. But try writing one like it.
Nights are long since you went away. I think about you all through the day. My buddy, my buddy, nobody quite so true. I miss your voice and the touch of your hand. I long to know that you understand, my buddy, my buddy. Your buddy misses you.
Now, when I said before that jazz musicians are among Walter Donaldson's greatest admirers, even if they don't always bother to find out who wrote what, I was thinking of songs and performances like this next one. It was written in 1926 for no particular reason, just a song. Walter probably knocked it out between the third and fourth races at Hialeah or Belmont Park, probably with his lyric writer Gus Kahn chasing after him with a paper and pencil.
What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? What can I do to prove it to you I'm sorry? I didn't mean to ever be mean to you. If I didn't care, I wouldn't feel like I do. I was all wrong, but right or wrong, I don't blame you. Why should I take somebody like you and shame you? I know that I made you cry, and I'm so sorry, dear. What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? I didn't mean to ever be mean to you. If I didn't care, I wouldn't feel like I do. I was all wrong, but right or wrong, I don't blame you. Why should I take somebody like you and shame you? I know that I made you cry, and I'm so sorry, dear. What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry?
What can I say after I said I'm sorry? One more of the several songs written by Walter Donaldson which remain alive not just as songs but also as jazz themes. Let me now reveal that I've been developing this week's program like a symphony, introducing themes which are now suddenly drawn together. Earlier, I mentioned in passing that Gordon Jenkins had once played a mobile piano in a nightclub. After that, I mentioned Ruth Etting appearing in a show called Simple Simon. Well, the idea of a piano that makes itself a moving target was introduced, as it happens, in the musical show Simple Simon. The star who peddled the thing around the stage was Ed Wynn, and the writers were Rodgers and Hart, who wrote a big song for Ed Wynn to peddle to. The idea was that Wynn should ride the piano around the stage while carrying a passenger, the well-known chanteuse of the day, Miss Lee Morse. And this big number turned out to be 10 cents a dance. Well, unfortunately, on opening night, according to Rodgers, Miss Morse, who had been busy trying to decant herself all day, was in no condition to take a ride on the piano, let alone sing. As far as she was concerned, the whole theatre was moving around. As somebody once said, she tried to throw herself on the stage as it came round for the second time, and missed. So Flo Ziegfeld replaced her with Ruth Etting. But in the middle of these speeding pianos and reeling singers, there was a song that was ejected from the show on the grounds of not being good enough. Rodgers and Hart were concurrently working on a show for London, for C.B. Cochrane. So they said nothing and slipped the rejected song into the London show, which was called Evergreen. Well, here's the song that wasn't good enough.
The world is lyrical because a miracle has brought my lover to me. Though she's some other place, her face I see. At night I creep in bed and never sleep in bed, but look above in the air, and to my greatest joy, my love is. She dances overhead on the ceiling near my bed. In my sight, all through the night, I try to hide. Underneath my counterpane, but there's my love up there above. I whisper, go away, my lover. It's not fair, but I'm so grateful to discover that she's still there. I love my ceiling more since it is a dancing floor just for my love.
The song that was flung out of one show on Broadway but won through in another in the West End of London. The show in London was called Evergreen, starring Jessie Matthews, who played the part of a young lady who poses as an old lady who has resorted to a miracle drug to make her look like a young lady. The hero doesn't fancy marrying an old lady, but of course she's really a young lady all the time, although of course a little bit older at the end of the evening than at the start. What plots they did devise. Before our finale, one of my intermittent apologies to the Society for the Preservation of Hideous Bandleaders, one or two of whom have actually been known to perform a useful deed in their time. This week, my hero is Russ Morgan, who made my favourite of all bandleader quotes, which was, "If I were given $1 million tomorrow, I would not only retire, I would get lost." Well, he said it a long time ago, back in 1936. And 8 years later, he moved a large distance towards that million by writing a really rather good hit song with some nice down-home harmonies.
You're nobody till somebody cares. You may be queen, you may possess the world and its gold.
You're Nobody Till Somebody Loves You, written by Russ Morgan, but the sentiments seem to fit the singer too, Dinah Washington, who married a drummer, then another drummer, then another, and then another, and then another, and then another. At the time of her tragic death at the age of 39, she had been through 6 drummers and established herself as one of the great singers of standard songs. And finally, let me return to the theme of Walter Donaldson and those songs of his that swung no matter who sang them. Why, they even swung on a Broadway stage. In 1928, Eddie Cantor's last great Broadway triumph opened. It was called Whoopee, and included one of the great celebrated baby songs that Donaldson and his partner Gus Kahn never seemed to tire of writing, nor the public of singing. I think it was the best of all the baby songs, and has deservedly survived since.
My baby don't care for show. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me. My baby don't care for furs and laces. My baby don't care for high-toned places. Brando just in style, and even Mr. Clooney's smile is something she don't see. My baby don't care, who knows it. My baby just cares for me.
My baby just cares for me. A salute to the great Walter Donaldson, who, if he had been as durable as Irving Berlin, would have been 93 years old this week. As it is, the old boy passed away nearly 40 years ago.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.